You're listening to a podcast from 702.
And as I just said a couple of minutes ago, as an interesting set of decisions that have been taken by Councillor Jeffrey Makubo and his colleagues. He, of course, is the executive mayor of our city of Johannesburg. And these decisions are necessitated by the unusual times we're living through with COVID-19. Gauteng is in the eye of the storm, and more specifically, Johannesburg is, with population density across our different regions in the city and 5.5 million residents. This means that the local government leadership cannot not be an active partner in helping both the provincial and the national government to be able to make sure that we prevent, contain and manage the spread of COVID-19. Councillor Makubo, good morning to you, and thanks so much for making time for us. I really do appreciate it.
Good morning, Eusebius, and good morning to the listeners, and thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
It's important, and it's only a pleasure. At a high level, just tell us from a process point of view. We turn on the telly, we turn on the radio stations, and then we have, importantly, the president or interministerial clusters working together, making pronouncements. We have provincial premiers doing so, and now also local governments. How are you guys working together in terms of just making sure that you are aligned, and then we'll get into the specifics of what came out of this particular statement yesterday?
We've been working closely with the Premier, and after the President announced the measures on Sunday, the Premier called a meeting of his Executive Council and invited us as mayors to ensure that we're aligned, and then the very next day we activated the city. We realize that people live in our spaces. They live in towns and cities. Mm. And if prevention or containment has to happen, it has to happen in our space, which is a city space or a town. So we are aligned. Even yesterday, we were with the Premier after his announcement to ensure that whatever we announce is in line with the regulations by Minister of COPTA, by the Premier. And we can only add and then be more radical and implement at the local space.
Mm. And in that regard, I mean, Johannesburg is really important because of population density. We've got a lot of people from places like Sandton, where you've got clusters of people in dense ways, in businesses, to our townships and to areas in the south, like Soweto, for example. And 5.5 million people, the opportunity for a virus like this being nasty really cannot be underestimated. We also have the history of deep inequality in our city, as well as apartheid spatial planning. When you came up with these pronouncements, and we'll dip into them in a second, what was the strategic intention behind them so that people can understand the motivation in terms of your objective and not think that, oh my God, the city is behaving like a nanny state?
You're quite correct. We took the macro issue of the city, saying we are a 5.5 million population city, but our space, our square meter rate is very small compared to the population. So people live in high density areas. Take the inner city, for instance, places like Ponte, High Point, where more than 1,000 people would stay in a block of flats. We have 211 informal settlements that do not even have access to basic hygiene that we need to think about. The inequality you speak about, this apartheid spatial planning, presents an opportunity for this virus to spread very quickly. Sandton is a center of tourism, you know, hotels and, you know, the Gauteng, people moving from the airport into Sandton. Mm. So we have two, and we've got Alex on the other side, which is a population of 350,000 people in a very small space. People live in a very, very, very congested area. And then moreover, we are a very youthful city. We've got a youth bulge. There are a lot of clubs and, you know, Maboneng precinct and Bramfontein, where it's a student city. And people like to have fun and congregate at these areas of entertainment and recreation. So we had to take those into account and say, then how do we respond to our objective reality? We have a Reavaya bus that moves people and taxis that move people from Barra, from Soweto into town. from Alex into town, from Orange Farm into town. And they spend a lot of time inside a bus because the poor live far away from economic opportunities. Now we had to take that whole special form and what you call a deprivation map into account, plot the high-risk areas and say where and how do we respond to this virus and the threat of this virus multiplying. I listened to your interview yesterday with the director of NICD.
Hmm.
It was quite interesting when she said it's only the known cases and we know that there's more out there.
Absolutely.
And that's really what it does, when I was listening to the director of NICD. And then it was up to that. We have to respond at source, at the base where it's likely to spread.
Now, the status of the decisions that were taken, and anyone who's listening, don't worry, I'm going to tell you what I'm referring to vaguely. I'm getting to it. We've got enough time, another 5-10 minutes with the mayor. But just the status of it, we've got your decisions you took at the level of the municipality, councillor, and at the same time yesterday, we are all now working through the Government Gazette and an incredible, incredible range of new regulations that have been gazetted and signed by the Minister of Cooperative Governance and Traditional Affairs. Some of those measures are actually stronger than what the mayoral committee decisions are. In terms of just the status, I just want to be very clear here from a legal point of view and also just a practicality point of view. Where there is conflict or alternatively where the government gazetted regulations are more strongly worded, I assume that the government gazetted ones from the minister will supersede whatever is in your statement?
That's correct. Remember, it's a national state of disaster as per the Disaster Act, and the minister is required by law to issue regulations and proclaim those regulations that now supersede whatever the premier or I have said.
Okay.
Those takes, yeah.
Okay, now let's get to the nuts and bolts of it. Now, here's my concern. This is might be an unkind thing to say, and once we are out of the COVID-19 thing, we can have a more fun, laugh-a-minute debate about this. But many of us as South Africans, we are not routinely law-abiding. We struggle to take civic duty seriously. We have a history of knowing that particularly unjust laws or draconian laws should not be complied with, for example. How confident are you that you will be able to get residents of Johannesburg to follow many of these rules? I mean, for example, if, you know, taverns are required to comply, you don't have more than 50 people, you don't sell alcohol, particularly after 6 p.m., you have clubs in places like Braamfontein that are very busy places where young people in particular are reveling it up, and many of them may feel invincible and may not have the same existential fears as you and I, Mayor. What are you going to do in terms of these regulations? To take those as an example, regulations in relation to the sale of alcohol, for example, in relation to taverns and clubs and bars and restaurants, this might be desirable from an extreme social distancing and self-isolation point of view. But someone might say to you, you guys have a massive and obvious implementation problem on your hand.
Quite correct. And because of the history you describe of our country, where we generally are rebellious as it relates to the establishment, we're going to have a problem in our hands. We're thinking of it happening in two ways. And before I say that, generally when you put regulations and laws, you're driving behavior underground. That's what happens. People still do the same things, but they move underground. They go underground. They don't do it openly. And that poses more of a problem because at least you can't police what you don't see. We're trying to send a message that it's in everyone's interest that we behave. We're trying to get the shop owners, the tavern owners, the entrepreneurs who are selling alcohol and all that to cooperate and to enforce this, because it's in the interest of the long-term survival of their businesses that we try and contain this virus. Our Department of Economic Affairs is using both the carrot and the stick to say, guys, if you don't do it in the long run, you might not even have customers in the business. But at the same time, we have to, our bylaw enforcement unit is being capacitated from from other specialized units, at least in the next few weeks, to ensure that we you know, we are at the cemeteries, we are at the clubs, we are at the taverns, we are at the halls, community halls. We see that the libraries are not open. So there'll be a different kind of policing that you're going to be doing, understanding the fact that you might be driving this behavior underground. That's normal club behavior. Now we're driving it completely underground, but we're trying to get people to say, it's in my interest not to do it.
Do you have enough personnel? Let's take the JMPD, for example. They have their hands full ordinarily during tough times over the weekend, during Easter, for example, with the existing laws that need to be enforced. Now we're talking about citywide regulations that need to be enforced immediately, starting from today. They can't be everywhere all at once. I would imagine that if one randomly goes across the city with a camera or a smartphone, you're going to find countless restaurants, bars, pubs, taverns that will be operating. What kind of personnel upscaling in terms of numbers are you doing?
We agree that you don't have enough personnel to police everywhere and be everywhere. With the city manager, we're looking at different options, especially on the policing side, and saying how then do we help. We think that if we punish a few severely as per the regulations, behavior will change from other taverns and restaurants and all that, because they know if they get caught, it will be a big fine. We are reinforcing with the urban inspectors. We are reinforcing with environmental health inspectors. So we reinforcing the team that will do inspections. And generally, our regions know where these places of entertainment are, and we can have a targeted. You know, you don't have to police the same place every day, but you can have a rotational thing. So we generally know where they are, and we can go on them. So, but as for other places like informal settlements, we recruiting volunteers to help us be ambassadors of spreading the message. Now, this is the positive aspect of it. Spread the message. This is how you prevent it. Please change your behavior, continue your interest, et cetera, et cetera. So we're doing it concurrently.
The staff that you deploy, including maybe ones that come out of semi-retirement, the kind of things that we've seen in other countries where they've had to plead with people who are no longer working in a particular department, in healthcare, for example, to come back, they're going to need also equipment. If we have our JPMD, if we have healthcare workers, if we have inspections happening, for example, what are you doing to make sure that they are protected? Do you, for example, and will you be issuing personal protective equipment to the staff that have to implement these bylaw regulation that have now been agreed to?
Correct. All our frontline staff, from JMPD to clinic staff to our customer care centers, are now being issued with PPE, you know, protective clothing. Protective equipment, protective clothing, you know, gloves, masks. The whole place is sanitized. We all our buildings now, we're trying to fortify them. Only necessary and essential services will be provided to the frontline staff. Now, for health workers and policing staff, yes, we will be issuing them with protective gear.
But do you have enough? Because the MEC of Health, to his credit, spoke honestly 2 days on this show about the fact that there needs to be procurement that needs to happen. He admitted from an auditing point of view, he doesn't know how much he has in terms of PPE, and also in addition, what the need will be in terms of how many staff are now going to be required to have personal protective equipment. And when him and I had that conversation, Mayor, we were only talking about healthcare workers. Now we are talking about workers in other part of the municipality, which means that the demand for personal protective equipment is obviously even bigger than just talking about a nurse at a clinic.
Yes, I can imagine for the province, it's actually much more difficult. We have 79 clinics in the city, controlled by the city. We generally know how many people work there. We have volunteers which are community health workers that we know. We have the front line, we have the JMPD, and we know the specialized units and other operational units and all that. So we have a number. What the problem would be for us as procurement is at the moment, you know, whenever there's a huge demand, it drives up prices.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so that's what our worry is. That,
okay.
Super normal profits being made by suppliers these days, even in the time of crisis, might pose a challenge. And the availability of enough equipment, PPE in the country, might cause a bit of a problem. So that's what we worry about, which is why when we say non-essential services, we shut down. The non-essential services, the staff can work from home. We've scaled up the IT usage of our staff. So the issues of our clinics, our libraries, our customer care centers, and the JMPD, our healthcare centers. JMPD for us are the front line to ensure that this virus is contained.
We'll take a break here, Mayor. I want us to talk next about the public transportation. That's also going to be a big focus with Minister Fikile Mbalula in the second hour. But at a city level, really interesting to me what you have decided in relation to Metro Bus and Rea Vaya bus services. And many of my listeners want some clarity around that. And then maybe the last issue, and then I'll let you go after that, is public spaces. When we talk about public parks, swimming pools, the Joburg Zoo, for example, what decisions have been taken on the other side of this? 702 Open Line. We're talking to the Executive Mayor of Johannesburg, Councillor Jeffrey Makubo, about a range of decisions that have been taken that will now be implemented. Number 6 reads as follows. Metro Bus and Rea Vaya Bus services are to drastically scale down operations in accordance with a principle of one person per two-seater and two people per three-seater bench. All buses will be sanitized once every 24 hours and washed twice a day. Sanitizers will be provided for commuters on buses and ticket offices and depots. Cash payments for trips are suspended and commuters are encouraged to get tags, which will be issued free of charge during this period. Now, it is all about operationalizing each one of these 9 decisions, Councillor.
Yeah.
If we take that as an example, take the tags, for example. Where do you get the tags from overnight?
We especially for Metro Bus, we've been encouraging cashless, ridership. So at the Metro Bus centers, they do have tags. Normally, people would pay for the tags. So to encourage them to get tags, we're saying let's issue out the tags for free, and then of course they have to pay for the ride. So you load, like, you know, loading airtime onto the tag.
Do you have enough tags? Do you know how many you have?
Metro Bus assured us that they'd be able to cope. Metro Bus is not as busy as Rea Vaya. Rea Vaya, anyway, they were using cards at the Rea Vaya stations because they've got dispensing machines. So Metro Bus, I think, will be able to cope in the short term. They assured us at the meeting that they'll be able to ramp up and scale up and then meet the demand.
And then on the part that says one person per two-seater bench, two people per three-seater bench, it's quite interesting because that's better than people being cramped, but I wonder whether it's enough to counter social distancing. You heard Dr. Lynn Morris yesterday. One definition she gave that surprised me is that simply saying hi to Jeffrey in the corridor doesn't count as contact. It has to be at least 15 minutes, which gave me a little bit of like, phew, don't panic too much. But at the same time, we've been told it should be at least a meter to even more of that distance. So if there are two people to a three-seater bench, for example, I'm just thinking, and the experts can help us, but that doesn't sound to me, even though it's better than cramping, it doesn't sound to me like social distancing. Does it to you?
No. I mean, after yesterday, you're correct. But, I mean, normally what we say, if you know a bus with the three seaters, we say even in a plane, the middle seat doesn't have anybody. We think that whether it's 30, it's like half a meter or something like that, it's not it will suffice. That's what the doctor said. Because our own doctors here at public health were part of the discussion. We said, no, that should suffice for now.
Okay. And then second last practical question. I've heard one or two people calling in and saying, listen, I was standing this morning. There was standing room only on many of our buses. We're going to have a problem. There are so many of our people, the poorest of the poor, the working poor, who have to go to work, who can't self-isolate, who are taking all sorts of risks. Do you really think that we can feasibly implement the seating rule, or will again you have your hands full in terms of policing it? Because even if people are not deliberately trying to ignore a civic duty, if there's a seat open, I would be haggling with the bus driver to let me on rather than waiting for the next bus, for example, especially when Madam Eusebius is waiting and may scold me for being late for work.
Very good question, Eusebius, in that... You know, we asked that if we say 50 people per normal bus, for instance, that normally it's an 80-seater bus, and I can see space, and I know that if I arrive 1 minute late, I might get a warning, and I'm going to be scolded. I'm going to force my way into that bus. So my behavior is not driven by a disease at that time. It's about my own survival and my own job, because that risk is there. And we said to especially the Rea Vaya, that how do we then increase the frequency of buses? How do we, instead of one in every 10 minutes, how do we have one every 4 minutes? And what does it mean? It's very costly to the city. But then we say cost-benefit analysis. If the cost of catching the virus is actually much higher than...
That's right, yeah.
Than having, scheduling... We've got a scheduled managed services, but rescheduling lots of buses, especially at peak.
That's
between
right.
6 and half past 8. But the rest of the day, you can scale down the operations and save petrol and diesel. But at peak, even in afternoon and evening, you just increase the frequency. Now you know that if this bus leaves at 8 o'clock, at 4 minutes past 8, there's another one I can see behind me.
Yeah.
Then at least they'll be able to...
I agree, we've run out of time. The other thing I was going to add, which I'll get to outside of this interview, is that those of us who then receive these workers really also need to do our bit and show patience if they come late to work, if it is in the interest of public health. Just on a factual thing, 2 second answer. Things like the swimming pools are obviously going to be closed down, the Joburg Zoo, various theatres. Many of my listeners wanted to know, did you also mean to include public parks or not? It's not in the statement, but some people are saying that on social media. Are public parks around Joburg closed?
We have not closed them as yet, but we're saying you can't congregate in your large numbers. You can't have events there.
Okay.
If we see that they're becoming a problem, then we'll shut them down.
Okay.
For now, we're not closed.
All the best, Mayor, and thank you so much for coming on the show.
It's a pleasure, and thanks for having me.
That's the Executive Mayor of Johannesburg, Councillor Jeffrey Makubo.